Canada's retaliatory tariffs take effect Tuesday, and President Trump told reporters Friday he will probably respond. That word probably is doing a lot of diplomatic heavy lifting. It's not a confirmed escalation, but it's a clear signal that the White House isn't going to let Canadian tariffs land without a countermove. The question is what form that countermove takes and how quickly.
For context, the current dispute traces back to earlier Trump tariff rounds on Canadian steel and aluminum, Canadian dairy, and a range of manufactured goods. Canada's response has been targeted, aimed at goods from politically sensitive U.S. states, which is the standard playbook for retaliatory tariffs. You go after Kentucky, bourbon, and Ohio auto parts, precisely, because you want senators and representatives to feel the pressure.
And that strategy has worked in past trade disputes. The problem is that it assumes the president responds to congressional pressure in a conventional way, and this administration has shown it doesn't always operate that way. Trump's probably could mean a tariff announcement Monday morning, or it could mean a tweet that resets the entire negotiation dynamic before Tuesday's tariffs even clear customs.
The economic stakes are real on both sides. Canada sends about 75% of its exports to the United States. That dependency is a vulnerability, and Ottawa knows it. But the U.S. also imports an enormous amount of Canadian energy. Roughly 60% of U.S. crude oil imports come from Canada. Any tariff structure that catches energy in its net creates immediate cost pass-throughs to American consumers. That's political risk for the administration.
This is actually a good moment to talk about how trade escalation ladders work, because the public discourse tends to flatten them into a binary, either there are tariffs or there aren't. In reality, tariff policy has multiple escalation rungs, and the signal value of each rung matters as much as the economic value. A 10% tariff on Canadian auto parts is an opening gambit. A 25% tariff on Canadian energy is a message that you're willing to absorb domestic pain to make a point.
The UZMCA is also sitting in the background of all this. And it's worth noting that the original intent of that agreement was to provide exactly this kind of dispute resolution framework. The fact that both sides are reaching past the agreement's mechanisms toward unilateral tariff action suggests a level of political frustration that trade law alone can't resolve.
Shifting south, Costa Rica's President Laura Fernandez made a striking statement to Reuters this week, saying that U.S. ground operations on Costa Rican soil would boost security. She immediately hedged it. No concrete plans exist. Any arrangement would need legislative approval. But the fact that she said it publicly is significant. Costa Rica hasn't had a military since 1948. Its national identity is built around that choice. Inviting foreign military operations is constitutionally and culturally fraught.
What's driving it is cartel transit routes. Costa Rica has increasingly become a corridor for drug and human trafficking networks moving product north toward the U.S. market. The government there is dealing with violence levels that would have been unthinkable a decade ago. From Fernandez's perspective, a security arrangement with Washington is a practical response to a security crisis that her own institutions aren't equipped to handle alone.
The U.S. angle here is the broader Trump administration push to securitize the Western Hemisphere, which we've seen play out in various forms, the Colombia pressure earlier this year, the Panama Canal rhetoric, various Central American migration enforcement agreements. Costa Rica would be another node in that network.
But the legislative approval requirement she mentioned is real. The Costa Rican legislature is not going to rubber stamp foreign troops operating on national soil, especially from a party coalition that includes significant left-of-center representation. So we're probably looking at months of debate, even if Washington sends a formal proposal, which, as of today, it hasn't.
And relatedly, the guilty plea this week from a smuggler who moved migrants through a cartel-built border tunnel adds texture to why these conversations are happening. These aren't improvised operations, they're engineered infrastructure projects. The tunnel in question was apparently sophisticated enough that it took significant planning and resources to build. That's a cartel behaving like a contractor, not a street gang.
Which changes the security response calculus entirely. You can't police your way out of an engineered network with the same tools you'd use against opportunistic crime. That's part of why Fernandez is floating the idea of U.S. involvement. The threat has industrialized, and the response needs to scale accordingly.